Hare Krishna. So you're asking a question, why do we fast on Ekadasi? First of all, why do we do anything? Why does anyone do anything? So we act because of the impulse of duty. We act because of the impulse of desire. We act because of fear. Or we act because of love. Some people, they act, they're moving because of love. Some people are moving because of fear. You march, people are in the army, they have to fight, because if they don't fight, they get to go to jail. So they're moving out of fear. And then some people are moving out of duty. So duty means dharma. Dharma means shastra, religion. Yama niyama, nisheda, the rules and regulations. So human life, animals are moving also, but they're moving out of fear, they're moving out of desire. Animals move out of desire for food, or they move out of fear, so they run away from a bigger animal. A big animal comes and they run, they move out of fear. Or they move out of desire, impulse of desire, people move. Desire to eat, so the animal moves looking for food. You can't say duty, animals don't move out of duty, they don't follow Shastra. So human beings are meant to follow Shastra. And Krishna says in Gita that if you don't follow Shastra, then you get no happiness, no perfection, and you don't attain the ultimate destination. Yashastra vidimutrija vartate kamakarta nasa siddham avapnati nasukam napuram gatim. Nasukam napuram gatim. Nasukam sukanehoga. No happiness, no joy. Paramgatim, you don't attain supreme destination. Paramgatim, Vaikuntha neprapti. Vaikuntha neprapti, Vrindavan neprapti. So, moksha neprapti, moksha neyoga, punarjanam. And not siddhi, you don't get any siddhi, you don't get any perfections. You don't get any attainments in life. So in this life, or next life, there's nothing good that happens. Now we talk about mating. We mate according to Shastra. Krishna says in Gita, Dharma virudo kamasmi. It's the same as Hindi. Dharma virudo kamasmi. He says, Krishna says, I am that sex life, kam, which is not against Dharma. Dharma virudo kamasmi. So devotees follow this principle, this niyam. Okay, you're married, you're a grihastha, properly, lawfully married, husband and wife, vivaha yagya, all these things, whatever, Hindu marriage and civil marriage. And then you want to have a child. Sex is for procreation, for children. And outside of that, then it's virudha. And then there's so much prophylactic and preventative measures and this and that and everything. And then even that fails, and then there's abortion and all these disastrous murders going on in the name of unregulated sex life. Dharma virudha, against Dharma. So devotees don't live like that. They live according to Shastra. You want two children, then you combine twice. This is proper. But more than that, it's like animal life. It's against the Shastra. And you have to pay. You pay, everyone pays the price. AIDS, venereal disease, so much problem. Many types of infections and breast cancer and this thing and that thing, all these new diseases, because people are irreligious. This is papa fall reaction. Nature reacts. You go against nature, you get reaction. Action, reaction. This is the physics, law of physics. What goes up must come down. So this is, and then fighting bhayam, ahara nidra maitan bhayam. And fighting is also according to Shastra. If it's a religious war, and to establish dharma, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tanatpanam srijamiham. Dharmasya glani means a break in religion. Religion has been broken or forgotten. Then it has to be revived. So Arjun, when the government was being ruled by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan, irreligion was prominent. And so people were not peaceful, not happy. Duryodhan was happy, but the Pandavas were unhappy. They were denied, they were cheated out of their kingdom, and their wife was insulted. Draupadi was insulted in the public assembly. and they were driven to the forest. This is all adharmic. So then Krishna said, you have to fight to establish dharma. There are so many demoniac kings ruling the earth right now. Duryodhan, Shishupal, Jarasandh, very powerful demons. Chediraj, the king of Bihar, Shishupal, Jarasandh, very powerful kings, and they're all demoniac and harassing the people and going against dharma, against shastra. So then he had to fight. So then we fight according to shastra. So devotees, they live their life based on shastra. So why do we fast on Ekadasi? Because it says this is Hari Vasara. This is the day of Vishnu, the day of Hari, Ekadashi. This is Hari's day. It's like we have Mangalvar, Budvar. Mangalvar is the day of Mars, and Budvar is the day of Mercury, and Shanivar is the day of Saturn, and Ravivar, or Itwar, Ravivar is the day of the sun, and Monday is the day of the moon. Right? So Ekadasi is the day of Krishna, Hari Vasara. It's an opportunity to live. Vas means to live next to Hari. So the Shastras say, if you're a Vaishnava, then you should honor this day. If you're a Vaishnava, if you're a worshipper of Ram or Vishnu, Narayan or Krishna, you believe in the personality of Godhead, of Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, then from the age of 8 years old until 80 years old, you are supposed to do upavas, fast on this day. Under 8 years old, you don't have to follow, too young. And over 80, you're either realized or you've realized all the fall by now, all the tapubalam, you have it all. But even if you're over 80, usually you set a good example. I know one Gaudiya Vaishnava Sannyasi, he was lived a long life, and even all throughout his life, even up after 100 years old, he was doing Nirjala Ekadasi. He's a Brahmin from birth. So his whole life, since he was 8 years old, 8 to 102, Nirjala Ekadasi. The Shastras are telling, and so we follow the Shastras, but the ultimate principle of bhakti, we're bhakti yogis, Vaishnavas are bhakti yogis, they're performing bhakti, devotion. Bhakti mama vijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Krishna says, I can only be known, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Narayan Vishnu, can only be known by devotion, bhakti. That is the only way. Knowing truth, tatvata. So the principle of bhakti means to act in such a way to give pleasure to Krishna. Krishna is pleased when we do shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam sakyam atmanavedanam, navavira bhakti. When we engage in navavira bhakti, Krishna becomes kushi, kushraho. Bhagavan ne kushi, apka ne kushi. Bhagavan kushi, apka kushi. Samaste. So if God is happy, man is happy. God is unhappy, then man is unhappy. So this is the aim and objective of devotion. If you're devoted to someone, that means you love them. If you love someone, it means you serve them. And the purpose of serving them is to make them happy, give them pleasure. Otherwise, what's the point? If you're a wife and you like all kinds of Italian food and your husband can't stand it, and he only likes Indian food, and then you make all kinds of Italian food, and say, here's a nice dinner, you have this prasad. And say, what is this? I don't like this food. No, I like very much. So that's not love, that's exploitation. That's taking, not giving. So the spiritual world is based on dedication. Everyone's dedicated. Units of dedication. Everyone's dedicated to the center. There's only one center, Krishna. Everyone's dedicated to his pleasure. You can imagine if you have a house and you have a house full of lazy men that don't want to work, it'll be like hell. Right? Everyone's just lying around the house, no one's working. That'd be like hell. But imagine if every member of the house is working very hard to make money. And how much opulence there'd be in that house? Because everyone's bringing in money. So it'd be nice food, nice electricity, nice air conditioning, all kinds of amenities, nice furniture. Because the house is filled up with 100 people, and everyone's working very hard. And they're bringing money into the house. So the house is thriving with prosperity and opulence. But there's 100 people in the house, they're all like, oh, you work? No, I don't want to work. I don't want to work. Hey, but there's no food. Oh, it's okay, no food. But they turn off electricity, it's cold. No, I don't want to work. So this is like the spiritual world, everyone is working very hard to please Krishna. So therefore, everyone is enjoying. Everyone is enjoying bliss because everyone's cooperating. Everyone's dedicated. Everyone's working very hard in dedication for the pleasure of Krishna. And as a result, they're enjoying Krishna's happiness. Because this spiritual world is nothing but Krishna's abode. So everyone's just running around making him happy, pleasing him. They're all dedicated to him. So everything's very prosperous there. What is the prosperity in the spiritual world? Everyone is prosperous with bliss, joy. Everyone's full of joy and bliss. Because everyone is cooperating together for a common cause. Like if 100 people, oh, we have to work to develop this house. So everyone's working and bringing home money. Okay, now you bought 5,000, I bought 5,000. Okay, now we have 25,000, five of us. What do we do? Well, let's get air conditioner. Okay, air conditioner. Everybody enjoys air conditioner. Now let's get nice refrigerator and let's get all these things. So everyone's working. So this is the spiritual world. So bhakti means to give pleasure to Krishna. So Krishna is pleased when we observe Ekadasi. And of course, it's beneficial for us also. Not only spiritually beneficial, because it pleases God, which benefits our soul, and creates Sukriti. And Sukriti increases our Shraddha. By increasing our pious activities or religious activities in relation to Bhagavan, it's called Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti, Sukriti in relation to God. There's Sukriti in relation to man, and Sukriti in relation to God. Building a road, putting in lighting on the road, building a bathing tank, digging a well, building a school. This is all Sukriti in relation to man. And the results are here in the material world. I open a school, free education. So that's Sukriti, that's Manush Sukriti. That's called Falunmukhi Sukriti. That which gives fall in this material world. What kind of fall? If you open a school and get free education, then you die, the next, and you may be just some stupid baniya. Can't read Sanskrit, can't do anything. But next life you'll be born a Brahmin, and you'll be very intelligent. And you'll be blessed by Saraswati, because you did some punya. But bhakti unmukhi punya, or bhakti unmukhi sukriti, is sukriti which turns your face towards God. Serving sadhus, building a temple for the worship of Vishnu, opening a Sanskrit vidyalaya for the study of spiritual shastras, Ved Puran, or donating clothing to sadhus or brahmacharis, or feeding brahmacharis, bandara for sadhus, or building dharmashala for sadhus to live, or donating cows to a temple, all these type of things. These are spiritual. And what to speak of reading shastra, that's also sukriti. Reading Bhagavad Gita every day, doing mandir parikrama, these are all spiritual sukriti. Pious religious acts in relation to God. And the fruit of that, or the follow of that, is maybe you can get also knowledge, all these things may come. But the main thing is you'll be inclined towards God. The main fall is that you'll increase your Shraddha, your faith. There's a Gyata Sukriti and Gyata Sukriti. Gyata Sukriti, Gyata, Gyanata. Gyanata mixed with knowledge. Gyanata, or the tendency towards knowledge. So Gyata Sukriti means meritorious works done knowingly. Good works done knowingly. I know what I'm doing and I'm doing it. I read in the Purana that anyone who builds a temple of Vishnu will get liberated. So I want to build a temple. I want to get liberated. So I use all my money from my clothing business and I build a Vishnu temple. A Lakshmi Narayan temple, like Birlas, I build all these temples. So that's Gyata Sukriti. Then there's Agyata Sukriti, unknowing benefit. That there's somebody's in karmic clothes and he's hitchhiking and you pick him up and you give him a ride, but he happens to be a devotee. And you're giving him a ride from Vrindavan to Delhi to the temple. And then you say, oh, you know, you stop and you say, you must be hungry. You take something, some food, and you buy some food for him, buy him a bottle of water and some dry fruits or whatever. Some more service. And you don't know anything. You're not knowing he's a devotee, you're not knowing anything. You were nice to him. So then that's called agyata, unknowing sukriti. You did pious, good thing. You served a devotee. Vaishnava seva is spiritual sukriti, Vaishnava seva, Bhagavan seva, Vaishnava seva, spiritual sukriti. Then all of a sudden, because of that result of that unknowing works, then maybe that increases your faith in God, and you think, well, maybe I should visit a temple. So then you go to the temple, and that's jñāta sukriti. You know, oh yeah, it'd be good for me to visit a temple. I haven't had darshan in so long. That's called jñāta sukriti. So ajñāta sukriti leads to jñāta sukriti. Then these two types of sukriti increase one's faith in God. And how that works is that these activities lead you to a sadhu, this shraddha. The fructification of shraddha is sadhu sangha. As your sukriti, your spiritual sukriti and good spiritual activities increase, then your spiritual faith in God increases. Then when God is pleased with that, then he directs you to meet a sadhu, saintly person. Then you hear from him some shiksha and get some enlightenment. Tamasi mam jyotirgama. Come out of the darkness, come to the light. So this observing of Ekadasi is a shastric injunction. It's an injunction of the shastras. It's called shastra vidhi. We say scriptural injunction. This is English. Scriptural injunction, order of the shastra. You're a human being, it must be done. And there are some kingdoms that you can read in Ekadasi Mahatmyam. There are some kings of lore of ancient times, that in their kingdom, all the human beings would fast on Ekadasi, and even all the animals, all the birds. No one was allowed to eat grains. Not even men, women, anybody, and even animals. No animal, no living entity was allowed to eat any grains on Ekadasi. It was so strict. If he caught anybody eating grains, he would just finish them. So this is a good... So everyone was acting out of fear. Everyone's acting, following Ekadasi out of fear. And they get beat up or chopped up. So this is an injunction. It's an order of the shastra. But devotees, everything we do, we want to check and see. Anukalyena sankalpa. There are six symptoms of sharanagati or surrender. And one is, what was I saying? Anukalyena sankalpa. Anukulya, sankalpa. To accept things that are favorable for Krishna, for his pleasure. This is one of six forms of surrender, sharanagati. Sadvida, sharanagati. Six types, vida, of surrender. And pratikulyena varjanam, to reject those things, or pratikul, against the family, against my group, against my interest, pratikul. Anukul, is following my family, anukul or anukulya, means favorable, progressive, advantageous. And sankalpa, we accept those. So devotees, they live by these rules. So it's favorable for me to follow Ekadasi, to fast all day. And the proper following of Ekadasi is to drink nothing, maybe some water, from sunrise. Ekadasi runs from sunrise until sunrise. 7:15 in the morning today until 7:15 tomorrow, that would be Ekadasi, 24-hour period. So the shastras say that if you're sick, you should fast, water, everything. But if you're old and sick and invalid or whatever, then you should fast until sunset. Anukalpa. It's called anukalpa. And after sunset, you can take some fruits. Not all these elaborate Ekadasi things, this, that, the other thing. This is all later day. Savadana, puris, and kudu flour, kudu atta, halava, and chestnuts. Kudu is chestnuts, I think. Chestnut? There's white things with green outside and white inside. Kudu, I think it's kudu. And banana flour, halava, kela fal. There's all many laga laga items. It's not that you have a big feast on Ekadasi. This is bogus. This is not correct. So this is the law that if one gets too sick, okay, then after sunset you can take something one time, egg bar. And Krishna becomes very pleased. And of course it's called Harivasara, because in this day it gives one an opportunity to live close to Krishna. Vas means residence, to live near. Harivas, you can move very close to Hari. And of course the day should be spent chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, Smaranam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. It's best to arrange one's holidays on Ekadasi. Work on Sunday and take off on Ekadasi. Usually people take off Sunday. But, of course, it changes every month what day it is, so you have to advise your patients or make your schedule accordingly. If you're a dentist, for example, you can schedule appointments one day or another day. So you say, okay, Sunday, you just say, you can make your own schedule. So 2 days a month you should take off, just stay home, hear and chant, fast. So fasting, of course, on Ekadasi, it's very good for spiritual life. It pleases the Lord. When the Lord is pleased and Bhagavan is happy, then he gives kripa, prasad, yasya prasada, bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada, nagatikatopi. By the mercy of God, one can make perfection in life. Bhagavan kripa, Bhagavan prasad, Bhagavat prasad. He can become attached to Bhagavan, detached from maya, become purified, become free from illusion, and anartha, avidya, all these things can go away by the mercy of God. It's a very, very powerful day, Hari Vasara. So this is one level of description about this day. But once in Kurukshetra, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave a lecture about Ekadasi, very interesting lecture back in 1933 or so, which is a few years ago. 67, 8, 75 years ago or so. But he was saying that Ekadasi means 11. 11 days after Amavasya and 11 days after Purnima. This is when it comes. And what happens, because he studied Jyotish, he wrote some book called Surya Siddhanta. He wrote some book about Jyotish called Surya Siddhanta. And then later he got the name Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So he's explaining in that lecture, our Param Gurudev, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that 11 days after the sun, 11 days after, 11 days after Purnima and Amavasya, when it's Ekadasi, then the moon is it's kind of weak rays. There's weak rays of the moon 11 days after Amavasya. Not the moon, because the moon is almost full on one of those Ekadasis. But in these two times, the position of the moon and the sun at these two times of the month, it affects the tides. The tides. Tides means the ocean, the water, the lake, the ocean, Sindhu, Samudra, Sagar. And it creates some disturbance in the atmosphere. These are somewhat disturbed days. So because the vibrations from the moon and sun are somewhat diminished or either increased during the Shukla Paksha Ekadasi or decreased during the Krishna Paksha Ekadasi, they affect the human body also. Because we have water in our body. 75% of our body is made of water. Blood, lymph, cerebral spinal fluid, all these things. So much water is there. Basically, we're practically a watery body. So when the moon is, when it's Ekadasi, this day of the month, these 2 days of the month, affect the body. So what happens is the body, it becomes, the fluids, they dry out, they become agitated. So one becomes agitated, so his digestion is not very good on these days. The physical digestion is not very good. And also one becomes somewhat disturbed, especially during Shukla Paksha. Shukla Paksha, the moon is giving a great effect on the mind. Because Ekadasi and Shukla Paksha Ekadasi is only 4 days before Purnima. Three or four days. Ekadasi, Dvadasi, Trayodasi, Chaturdasi, Purnima. Right? So that's 4 days. So what happens is on Purnima, as everyone knows, people become very passionate. Very lusty, very passionate, because the moon is affecting them. The moon is affecting the fluids of the human body are being drawn. They're all being drawn and pulled up to the head. even have a Latin word called lunatic. Lunatic. Because the Latin word for moon is luna. So lunar, we say lunar cycle, solar and lunar. Lunar comes from luna. Luna. So lunatic means one is affected by the moon. Everyone's affected by the moon. So by fasting on Shukla Paksha Ekadasi and Krishna Paksha Ekadasi, fasting, because you're not eating and not supposed to drink, that increases the heat of the body. Tapasya. Brat, when one is doing brat or fasting on Ekadasi, is called performance of tapasya. Tapasya. Tap means heat. The word tap. Tap means heat, fire. Tapasya means one who's in the fire, one whose body is burning. So what is burning? The body itself is burning, always burning. Fire, there's always a fire in our body, otherwise we're dead. Fire in the eye is called ak-agni. Ak-agni is a fire in the eye. And di-agni is a fire of intelligence. And jadar-agni is a fire in the stomach. And there's also in the bones some fire. So these are primary fires in the body. And these fires are diminished or weakened, then eyesight goes down, or digestion goes down. Or memory goes down. Diagni. D means intelligence. Diagni. Diagni is diminished or weakened due to disease or infirmity or old age. Then one is senile, can't remember. So when one performs tapasya, it increases all these fires. The body becomes hot. When the body becomes hot, then it burns up all these extra fluids. Because heat evaporates water. You put water on the stove and turn on the stove, what happens? You sure? Yeah, it evaporates. So this heat of tapasya evaporates this water of lust on Shukla Paksha Ekadashi and Krishna Paksha Ekadashi. The disturbance that's caused by the increase of water in the body, increase of fluids due to the position of the sun and the moon at these times, on this particular day, Ekadasi, it gets counteracted. The excess of water, there's an excess of fluids being drawn in the body when you do fasting, nirjal, no drinking any water, eating any food, then that fire burns up that extra ras. Ras means water, liquid, feeling, mood. It burns it up, so one, especially on Shukla Paksha Ekadasi, because it's going towards the full moon. So just before you get to the full moon time, when people become very lusty and very passionate, and very agitated and very disturbed, you perform this Ekadasi brat and do nirjal, then that cools down the body. Because that fire burns up all that lusty ras. So then after Ekadasi, the next day, you feel cool, feel relaxed, feel some... It's a psychic cooling. It's psychic and mental. The mind is cool because that fire burns up. And it also burns up sins. Ekadasi burns up sins. Karmani nirahati chakintu kintu chabhakti bhajan. Karmani nirahati kintu chabhakti bhajan. In Rama Samhita it says that by doing bhakti bhajan, then karmani nirdahati. Karmani nirdahati. Karma hat. Hat means it's destroyed. Hati. Like this hati. Nirdahati means destroyed. So karma, sins, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya, kam bij, krodh bij, these are all seeds of sin. Karma bij. They become fried in the fire. If you have a karai, and you put some seeds in there and turn on the heat, then they become, you can't make them grow. They roast. They roast in the karai under the heat, and then you put them in the ground, they can't fructify. They cannot grow. So this karma bij. Karma bij comes in the form of kam bij, krodh bij, then lobh bij, all these desires. It's called vasana. Vasana means desire arising in the chitta due to sanskaras. Vasanas arise due to our sanskaras. But when we perform bhakti bhajan, then these bijams become destroyed. Nirdahati, karmani nirdahati, kintu cha bhakti bhajan. So, Hari Vasara, we fast on this day and we do bhakti bhajan. We spend all, we chant 64 rounds of japa, or we read, study and read Srimad Bhagavatam. Study and read Srimad Bhagavatam. And we stay with sadhus, we chant in kirtan. We do all limbs of bhakti, navavita bhakti. So this is bhakti bhajan. So all the sinful seeds are getting burned up. So these are some explanations about why we fast on Ekadasi. And the other thing they say, that Ekadasi, so there's the Adiyatmika Vichara, Adibhautika Vichara, and Adidaivika Vichara. So from the, we discussed from the body level, and we discussed from the Shastra level, and now we discuss from Adidaivika level, or Krishna's level, Vichara, the consideration of the Daivik or transcendental level. Daivyesha Gurumai Mami Vyayi Prabhadyante. So there, they say, Param Gurudeva said, Bhakti said, this 11 days after Purnima, 11 days after the moon, this Ekadasi represents the 11 senses. Karmendriya, Panch Karmendriya, and Panch Gyanendriya. Working senses. The working senses, Karmendriya, and the knowledge acquiring senses, Gyanendriya. Knowledge acquiring senses are the eyes and nose, right? Eyes, nose, mouth, ears, and hands. Then the working senses are the mouth, the stomach, the genital, anus, legs, hands, like this. The working senses. Karmendriya and Gyanendriya. And man. Man means mind. Mind is the chief of the 11 of these 10 senses. So 11. So Ekadasi means 11. Das plus ek is 11. So in Ekadasi, Krishna's 11 senses become disturbed. We also, as I mentioned, we also, our physical bodies become disturbed because of the position of the moon and sun. And this day in relation to the moon and sun, the body fluids become disturbed, agitated, and increase of passion, increase of lust. So we counteract this by burning this up by tapasya, burn up this rasa by tapasya, then we can cool down, keep a cool head, shanti, and do bhajan, bhakti, and remember God, not get distracted. And then, so, but Krishna, he also becomes disturbed. His 11 senses become disturbed. And he demands more. Because when our senses are disturbed, they demand more attention. Like we're peaceful, all of a sudden our tongue is saying, oh, I'm hungry, eat. Oh yeah, I'm hungry. I'm just running around trying to find something to eat. You know, we're being pushed by our senses. They're called vegam, pushing of the senses. Rupa Goswami describes in Upadeshamrita, Vacha vegam, Manasakrita vegam, Jiva vegam, Jiva vegam, Udarapasta vegam. These are the first verse of Upadeshamrita, Nectar Instruction. Vegam, pushing of the tongue, Vacha, pushing of speech. Vacha vegam, Jiva, Jiva vegam, Manasakrita vegam. Pushing of the mind, the tongue, the speech, all these. These Karmendriya and Gyanendriya, they're pushing. So then we become, they demand, someone's pushing you, then they're demanding your attention. Someone's pushing you, naturally your attention will be there because they're pushing you. You try to avoid them or react or fight. So Krishna, on this day, Ekadasi, his 11 senses are also agitated. He wants more, he wants to hear more Harikatha. He wants to taste more bhoga. He wants to have more puja. His body is disturbed. He wants more seva from his sevites. He wants more attention. So therefore, we give him more attention. We chant more rounds in this day of Ekadasi. We devotees, we dedicated servants. We offer him more bhoga. These are all told in the Archanvidhi, deity worship instructions. One should offer more elaborate puja. In Krishna Balaram Temple on Ekadasi, they bathe the big deities with ghee on this day. Twice a month, they rub the large deities, Radhasham, Sundar, Krishna Balaram, Gornitai. The marble deity, they rub with ghee, and they wipe off with a warm towel dipped in warm rose water. And then they dry the Lord and they dress him. But ordinarily, they don't bathe every day like that, the big marble deities, only twice a month. The small Utsav deities, Ashtadatta Utsav deities, they bathe every day. So this is some special puja, the Thakurji, Anikadasi, special snan, extra arti, or camphor lamp, kapur, deepam, and or more boga, maybe chapan bog or whatever, and maybe new dresses and decorations and flowers and many things. And so this will satisfy Krishna. So Ekadasi is a day to Krishna's 11 senses become disturbed and he wants more seva. Usually we chant 16 rounds. Krishna said, no, today more. Hey, I want more rounds. So sometimes I send messages to my students. I say, today's Ekadasi, now chant, I want 64 rounds. So that's so I can. It's like sometimes you read in Ramayana or Mahabharata about Hidimba and these different demons. These rakshasas that live in the forest, and they demand that each village send out one bale gadi full of food, or maybe one human being or whatever. So then one day Bhima came to some village and they said, "Oh, this rakshasa every day eating one big bullock cart full of food." He said, "Oh, the bullock cart full of food? Where is that demon?" "Oh, he's in the jungle." So he said, "All right, you give me that bullock cart." So he loaded up the bullock cart full of food and Bhima sat on it and drove it. Because usually the rakshasa would eat the bullock cart and eat the driver. This was the deal. And so everybody would every family in the village, every month, they would sacrifice a bullock cart full of food and one son. And then the demon wouldn't come and grab anybody else, rakshasa. It was a peace treaty. Rakshasa peace treaty, peace settlement. So Bhima said, "What is this nonsense, guy? You know, give me that bullock cart." So he got in a bullock cart, and there's all kachoris and rasgullas and samosas and cheese sabji and malpua and gulab jamuns and ladu and I said that already. Rasgulla and rasmalai and every kind of thing you could imagine. And so then Bhima ate everything. Everything in the whole cart, brikodar. So, and then the demon, they say, "Hey, demon, where are you? Or, hey, rakshasa." And he came out and he was, "Hey, where's all the food on the cart?" And he said, "I ate it." Bhima said, "I ate it." "What? You rascal, I'll finish you. I'm going to put you inside in 1 second. He said, "Okay, let's see." So then they started fighting. Then Bhima took him and just pushed his arm inside his body and his legs inside his body like a jack-in-the-box. And then he went, and chucked him away. But this rakshasa, Hidimba, had one daughter named Hidimbi. Hidimbi, the daughter of Hidimba. So then she came out, and she was pretty, I guess, pretty cute or whatever. So Bhima said, "Look, you know, you can come with me. Since your father's not here to protect you, now you have to have a husband to protect you. So you get on the cart." So he went out with a cart full of food and he came back with a beautiful girl and a full stomach also. So that was a good deal for Bhima. So I was thinking that Krishna's like this. He wants special offerings on Ekadasi. So we have to offer ourselves. We have to put ourselves in the bullock cart of devotion and drive out to Krishna to please his senses on Ekadasi. So this is why, and it's beneficial for us. We fast to please Krishna, but it's also physically very good for health. Everyone knows anything about hygiene or health or nutrition is well aware that fasting once or twice a month is recommended, even by mundane nutritionists say it's very good to give your body organs a rest for 1 day. They say eat a fruit 1 day a week, eat fruit only, or 1 day a month. They have different ideas, but it's always good to fast. It's very good for physical health, and it's very, as I already told you, it's very good for spiritual health. It purifies the heart and procures the mercy of Krishna. Ekadasi Vrata Ki Jai. So Ekadasi, of course, there's a whole history of how she appeared. She appeared from the body of Vishnu. One of the Ekadasis, they celebrate that. I think it's the first Ekadasi, maybe in November, December, that's when it began. Vishnu was fighting some demon, a Mora demon or something, and somehow he fell on the ground unconscious. Then that demon was about to chop Vishnu. Vishnu was like in yoga nidra, just sleeping. He forgot about the fight. He forgot about the fight. He was just in yoga nidra, dreaming or something. Demons, oh, you rascal, you don't want to fight. I'll kill you. And he's going to come. So from his sleeping body came out this one Devi. One goddess came out from Vishnu's sleeping body. And she had swords and 10 arms like Durga. And the demon said, what is this? Some lady? I can't fight a lady. This is against the code. This is not, lady's not a kshatriya. What is this? He said, she told her, he said, you go home to your babies, you know. She said, I am Vishnu Shakti. Come on, you want to fight? And, he said, okay. And she started swinging her swords, her daggers. And he said, okay. So he started fighting and she just finished him off. She, women's lip. She defeated him. And then Vishnu woke up and he saw this blood everywhere and this dead demon. And this Devi was there, folded hands. And he said, oh, what happened? He said, well, you were sleeping, this demon was going to kill you, and I came out of your body, your Shakti, bitter half, and I killed him. Moksha, what's your name? He said, I don't know. I just appeared from you. Moksha, what day is it? Oh, today's 11th day after this. Today's 11th day. Okay, you're Ekadasi. Your name is Ekadasi Devi. And then he said that your day will always be... Then Vishnu said, because you did such a nice favor for me, your day will always be honored as the day of Hari. This will be the most special day of the whole month, these 2 days. So, of course, there's more story about that. But anything else? Do you have any questions?
Self-sacrificing means that you're very much aware of yourself and you feel that, yes, you're giving yourself to Krishna. And self-forgetfulness means that, you forget who you are. I mean, you don't think of your identity at all, probably.
Yeah, you're basically correct. You just have to refine the idea. For example, many people in this world, they sacrifice for some cause. They sacrifice for humanity or for their country or for their family. Husbands sacrifice for their families, or wives sacrifice for their husbands and families. And so, but they're conscious of it. So they're sacrificing. Like, for example, Mother Teresa, she won the Nobel Peace Prize, and everyone says, oh, she's sacrificing so much and she's helping the poor people of Calcutta and all these things. So she was sacrificing, so self-sacrifice, but she was aware. She was aware of what she was doing. She was well aware that, yes, I'm making this sacrifice, and maybe she's even in the back of her mind thinking, maybe I'll get some recognition. Maybe someone will give me a prize, or maybe someone will put my name somewhere, Mother Teresa Foundation, or whatever. There's some desire for pratishtha, adoration or distinction. But self-forgetful, this means that one is so much absorbed in helping someone or serving someone, they forget, they don't even know. They lose any consciousness, awareness of themselves. They've forgotten all about themselves. One person is sacrificing, but he's remembering himself. Yes, I know who I am, I have my individual identity, and even I'm searching for a little bit of recognition or a little bit of appreciation, a little bit of gratitude. But I'm willing to help day and night, help these poor people and sacrifice for these poor people. But in self-forgetful, someone is so much dedicated that they've forgotten all about themselves. They don't even know who they are anymore because they're so much absorbed in the object of service. So this is initial thing. So let's hear what this is all about. By worshipping beauty, one becomes self-forgetful. What is self-sacrifice? In self-sacrifice, one is conscious of himself. He thinks, I am giving something in charity. I am helping this person. Or, I am striving for salvation. He's aware that he's doing something for some cause. But in the condition of self-forgetfulness, one is so captivated and captured by the interests and desires of the other. And in Braj, this means Krishna. In other words, Mother Yashoda, especially the gopis, are so captivated and captured by the interests and desires of pleasing Krishna. So this in Braja, this means Krishna. The Braja gopis have absolutely no care or concern or awareness of their own selves. The Braja gopis have no separate interest. They're not even conscious of their own existence. They're not even conscious of their own bodies. I mean, I don't think that Mother Teresa in her self-sacrificing humanitarian activities ever ran out without any clothes on. Right? She would always be well aware of her body was dressed in her little white gown or whatever. She wouldn't wear half her bottom clothes on a top or dress one earring or whatever. She wouldn't go like this, haphazardly dressing. The gopis are like that. They forget their own existence. They only think of Krishna's pleasure and happiness from moment to moment. For example, this is a classic example. Once in Dwarka, Krishna had a headache. And he said, there's nothing that can cure my headache except the foot dust of the devotees, of a devotee. You heard this story? This famous story. So everyone in Dwarka refused. That means Rukmini, Satyabhama, Mitravinda, Kalindi, Satya, and Jamavati, Lakshmana, these eight queens of Krishna in Dwarka. That means Rohini, that means Vasudev, Devaki, Balaram, Uddhav, all everyone, means Ugrasen, everyone living in Dwarka, they heard that Krishna has a severe headache, migraine headache, splitting headache. And Krishna needed the dust of someone's feet to cure it. But everyone said, no. Everyone refused. I can't do that. If I do that, if I'm the putney, and they give the dirt from my feet and put on the head, because he said only by sprinkling that dust on my head will my headache be cured. So all of his wives said, no, this is a great aparad. This is a great offense to my pati. My pati is like Bhagavan. Pati ka Bhagavan hai. Bhagavan ka rup. Pati, they say like this. At least maybe it was like that 10,000 years ago or so. And now, Ajkal is pati Ravana rup. Aranyakashipu rup. Bin Laden rup. It's a fact. As Bhagavan ka rup means Bhagavan interest. Should lead the wife towards Bhagavan. Guru na shishyat, pitaro na shishyat. Guru na shishyat, pitaro na shishyat. One should not be guru or father or husband or wife unless he can liberate his children or dependents from birth and death. So they're all fearing, all the residents in Dwarkavasis were afraid. They all refused because they were so fear that they were afraid they would go to hell by this offensive act. So Narada Muni was deputed to try to find someone that would give the dust. So Narada Muni came to Braj. And he asked the Braja gopis, can you give some dust to cure Dwarkadisha's headache? Immediately they said, yes, take it all, take as much as you want. Surely. But then Narada Muni said, aren't you afraid? This is an offensive act, putting your dust on Bhagavan's head? Do you know who he is? He's Bhagavan, Dwarkanath, Dwarkadish. Oh, yes, okay, maybe we go to hell. Let us go to hell. Surely we'll go to hell. No bother. Let us go to hell. We don't care if we go to hell. As long as, if this act will help Krishna become cured and feel happy, then let us go to hell. So therefore, the gopis are the example of someone who's self-forgetful. They didn't care anything. They didn't care one iota for their name, fame, shame, bodies, future, past, liberation, death, hell, heaven, anything. They didn't care. Because they were self-forgetful for the cause of the center. Who is the center? Krishna. The gopis of Braj, they're always completely conscious of pleasing and benefit of the pleasure and benefit of the center, which is Krishna. The Braja gopis don't care for society, name, fame, relatives, scriptures, or their personal selves. Krishna is everything in their lives. So the gopis, they're a brudge, they're like a suicide squad. They're ready to sacrifice their body for the cause of the war. Everyone has heard of dharma, art, kama, and moksha. Religion, wealth, enjoyment, and liberation. The goal of Vedic culture, or the ancient Indian culture, Varnashrama Dharma, was moksha, or liberation. Everyone was working for art, to get art, desired objects, wealth. But what is the real art? Purushartha. The Purushartha, the objective of the human being. The goal of all human beings is called Chatur Purushartha, the four goals of human life, Chatur Purushartha. Some people say the goal of life is to get money or wealth. In the Bible, there's a story of Midas, M-A-D-A-S. He prayed. He prayed to be in touch with gold, right? The Midas touch. So the phrase is there, the Midas touch. So he was got so much gold. Everything he touched turned into gold. He faced a big problem though, because he had nothing to eat. Because everything he touched turned into gold. All the food that he touched, it turned into gold. And you can't eat gold. And you can't eat money. You can't eat rupees. You can't eat gold. So money is not a purushartha, an object. Money or wealth is not actually a purushartha, desirable object. What is a purushartha? A purushartha is happiness. You want to have a house, you want a wife or a husband, you want a nice car, you want children. But what is the ultimate purpose of all these things? You want happiness. If you analyze all your activities and desires, you really only want one thing, and that is happiness. Although, if I ask you now to take out a piece of paper and write down the best things that you want, you probably won't write happiness. You won't write, I want happiness. You'll write, I want money, I want a nice house, nice car, nice wife, good children, well-behaved children. But actually, the desired objective, or the purushartha, is only happiness. Happiness is the only thing from which you don't want anything more. Happiness is the only thing. If you have that, you don't want anything more. The ultimate goal is that, happiness. If you get that happiness, you don't want anything else from that. If you have a wife, if you have children and money, a car, etc., from these objects, from these persons, you want to derive something. These objects are only intermediary steps to attain something else. The real purushartha is happiness. Because if there is happiness, there is nothing else to attain. Happiness is not a means for something else. Happiness is the goal. That is the object. Everything else, wife, money, husband, home, car, is a means to attain happiness. Right? It's not that we want wife, we want the happiness that wife will give us. It's not that we want husband, we want the happiness that husband will give us. You want a house, like we say in English, a house is not a home. A house is not a home. Home is a feeling, home comfort, the happiness that's produced by cooperative loving people living within that house that makes a home. So we have this phrase in English, a house is not a home. You may have four walls, but the daughter's always in her bedroom, the son is always in his bedroom, and the husband's always in the TV room, and the wife's always in her room. They never talk to each other. They eat separately. They eat at different times. They come and go at different times. But they all sleep, eat, and pass stool in the same house. Now, is that house a home? It's just a hotel. travelers in an inn with the same surname. They're all Sharmas, but they all have different interests and different worlds and different eating patterns, and they never talk to each other. There's no harmony. There's no happiness. There's no camaraderie. There's no unity. So, there's no home. Home is where the heart is, as they say. But there's no hearts in the home, then the home is empty, void. So all these objects, TV, we have a cell phone. Why? If we just have a cell phone, does that give you happiness? Does cell phone produce happiness? No, but the cell phone is a means to get happiness, because then you can use the cell phone to call someone or whatever, like this. So this is the point, that the real purushartha, the real objective of everybody is happiness. If you have that, if you have happiness, then you don't need anything else. If you have that happiness, then you don't need wife, you don't need husband, you don't need cell phone, TV, anything. You don't need anything. Because that's the objective. You already have it, then there's nothing to work for. So the real purushartha is happiness. There's nothing else to attain. Everything else is just a means to attain the object. Like we say, means to the end. Happiness, and what is happiness? Happiness is synonymous with service. This is the secret of Bhakti Marg. This is the secret of the path of devotion. This is the secret of serving Krishna. The secret of the Bhakti Marg. Happiness plus service are two sides of the same coin. You know the coin? 1 rupee coin? 2. Paisa, mulya. Paisa, rupya. One side of the coin is seva. The other side of the coin, anand. Sevanand. There's a Sevanand currency. Happiness and happiness, service, money. One side of the coin is seva or service to Krishna, and the other side is happiness. So that means they're inseparable. The coin has two sides. It means one coin, but two sides. Heads and tails, top and bottom. So if you have seva, you have happiness. You have happiness, you have seva. They go hand in hand. In the material world, happiness, so this is the secret of Bhakti Marg. Happiness is one side and service is the other side. But in the material world, there's a different kind of coin. It's happiness one side, misery the other. Sukh and
Dukh.
In the material world, happiness and misery are two sides of the coin. But in the spiritual world, Bhakti Marg, with Bhagavan and Bhakta, happiness and service go together. The more service that one renders to Guru and Krishna, more service to Guru and Krishna means more happiness. In the material world, the more you enjoy means the more you suffer. If you take, you have to pay. Even they have phrases, maybe you never heard, I would think you've heard. Nothing in this world is free.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't know that in India, but in America we have this phrase. Nothing in this world is free. There's no such thing as a free lunch. You have to pay. Everything you have to pay. So if you're drawing material happiness from your body or from the body of someone else, then you're going to have to pay interest, heavy interest, because you're going to pay with pain, misery. If somebody today, someone's body is giving you happiness, the other side of the coin is that same person, that same body is going to give you misery. If you're trying to exploit your body for happiness, then the same body is going to give you misery the next day. Guaranteed. Therefore, devotees always want service. Devotees always want service because they want to be happy. Because this is the art, dharma art. The art, the objective of dharma is happiness and the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. That's transcendental calm. And when you're absorbed in satisfying the calm of Krishna, the transcendental senses of Krishna, then you're automatically liberated. Iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasagira jivan mukta suchate jivan mukta suchate nikalash vashtasu nikalash vashtasu jivan mukta suchate. Jivanmukta. You're a Jivanmukta, you're a liberated soul. Because Dharma, the objective of your religious practice is what? Is happiness. That's your Dharma, that's your art. And you attain that art, you attain that happiness by what? By serving Krishna and Guru. And serving Krishna and Guru means satisfying the kam of Guru and Krishna, the desire, Dharma, art, kam. And when you satisfy the kam of Guru and Krishna, then you're moksha, you're mukti, you're liberated, because you're no longer in the material world. You're beyond material, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya. You're in the transcendental realm. Jivan mukta sayuchate, iha yasya haridasya karmana manasagira, haridasi, haridas. You're serving a karmana manasagira. Gira means words or speech, and karmana means actions of the body, and manasa means thoughts and mind. Karmana manasagira. So this is a secret of bhakti marg. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what does he say in Shikshastakam? Nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, kapitam ba, jagadishakame, mama janmani janmanishve, bhavatad bhaktri hoitikuitui. I don't want anything in this world. All I want is seva. Hoituki apratiyata. Unconditional, unmotivated. No motivation, no calculation. Only seva, pure seva. Everything for the beloved, nothing for me. May you be happy in all regard, in all times, in all space. But Krishna is so kind that he's not a, let's say, Stalin. He's not a merciless dictator. He's a dictator, he's an autocrat. He's a transcendental autocrat. Dhiralita Nayak. He's carefree and joyful and happy and joking. But he reciprocates. He reciprocates. Ye tamam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. You love me fully, I love you fully. And you'll experience Krishna's love and his reciprocation. He's not a one-way street. In fact, he showers his love on the devotees. So I don't want anything, Lord Chaitanya says. All I want is service. Why should I want wealth? Why followers? Why do we want these things? We want for pleasure. We want for happiness. But that does not come from these objects. That's the Lord Chaitanya says. Nadanam the janam the sundaram. Followers I don't want. Wife, husband I don't want. Money, position, fame, name, prestige I don't want. Wealth I don't want. Because happiness doesn't come from these things. It really doesn't come from these things. And what is the proof? Many people have beautiful wives or handsome husbands, but they're not happy. Many people have so much money, crores of rupees, but they're not happy. Everyone sees it. It's nothing new. They have so many followers. Ekazarat, Mahamandaleshwara, Shasta Shiromani, Sri Srimad, Swami Bogananda, whatever, some great big guru, and thousands of followers. But he's not happy. So Lord Chaitanya says, oh my Lord Krishna, oh Jagadish, all I want is your devotion. Ultimately, a devotee doesn't even desire happiness from devotion. He just wants to please and satisfy Guru and Krishna. Happiness comes automatically. Because if you have a coin, you automatically have two sides. So the bhakti coin, the coin of devotion, has two sides, heads and tails, service and happiness. So we don't worry about the happiness, we just stay on one side of the coin. We just stay on the service side. We're worried day and night about service, seva, 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 more seva, more seva. And oh, why are you doing so much seva? Because I'm going crazy with bliss. The more service I do, the more blissful I become. And there's no back; it doesn't backfire like a car out of tune. When your car engine's out of tune, it backfires. goes down the road. Sounds like your car is farting or something. It's backfiring. So there's no bhakti doesn't backfire. But material activity, material sense enjoyment, it backfires. You get smoke in your face. You get a slap in the face. You offer your whole life to someone and they just slap you and throw you in the street without a bite to eat. This is a backfire. Maya is backfire. reactionary. Because we're trying to take something. By taking, we go down. By taking, we go down. By giving, we go up. So if we do seva, if we absorb ourselves in serving, happiness will follow. There's no need to ask. There's no need to ask separately for happiness. In the material world, we're getting all these things, and we're hoping, oh, this will give me happiness. That'll give me happiness. And I get this new car. Oh, it's so nice. This new car. I'm driving around. Then I go to sleep. I come out. Somebody smashed it up in the night and drove away, and dented all the sides. Oh my God! This car is not giving me happiness now. Now I take it to the body shop. Now I have to go back to the bus for 3 weeks until it comes out of the body shop. I'm back on the bus. And my car is there. I'm still making payments, and it's sitting in the body shop. So where's the happiness? There's no happiness. Oh, this man's going to give me happiness. This woman's going to give me happiness. And then, because we're entering it with that calculation, oh, I want something from this. And then we get slapped. We get kicked. But bhakti, we just enter it. Let me serve. No calculation. There's no need to ask separately for happiness. Just serve Krishna. Because that's cheating. Desire for yourself, desire for result is cheating. If you want some result, it means you're a businessman. You're doing business, you're not love. So all these all material relationships, mothers and children, fathers and children, husbands and wives, it's all cheating relationships. So they're all, because they're all entering this relationship calculating what's in it for me. What's he going to give me? Or what's she going to give me? That's cheating. It's already contaminated by your selfishness. This is not real. This is not love. You say, oh, I love you. I love you more than anything. I can't live without you. You're my everything. It's all bogus mantras. It's all just hypnotism, jadu, just to create some hypnotic effect to put the person in a position so you can exploit them. This is a fact. So this is all cheating. Krishna says in Gita that one should work without attachment to results. So devotees pray that they don't want happiness. They want service. Because the service itself is so much satisfaction. Devotee has no separate idea. Oh, now I want something beyond this. I want something else. This we must realize and understand from the Srimad Bhagavatam. When we study the Srimad Bhagavatam, we must understand this bhav of the gopis, paro dharma prochitikaita vacho. This bhav is free from all cheating. There's no selfish motives. All religions are full of cheating to get some results. People want to get something from the religion. They want to go to heaven. These are all cheating processes. And cheating blocks our progress, offering us limited goals. So it blocks the mind from attaining the highest goal of Krishna Prem, which gives unlimited bliss. That's why other religions are cheating. Because in the Bhagavatam, the second verse of the first canto of Bhagavatam, first chapter, Dharma Prochita Kaitavo Cha Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. Dharma Prochita Kaitavo. Kaitav means cheating. Kaitav Dharma. Someone might say, how can Dharma be cheating? Dharma means religion. I mean, it's religious duties, but it's cheating. If someone said, oh, we'll read some Dharma Shastra. Oh, if I perform this Dharma, I'll go to Swargamukti, I'll get Swargamukti. I'll go to Chandramukti, I'll go to Chandraloka or Suryaloka. Or maybe I even go to Vaikuntha. And this is all, so we go for that. We get attracted to that. That means that they're cheating us because actually the highest goal for the living entity, pro dharma, yenatma supersedati. What gives the greatest happiness to the Atma is pure devotion, pure service to Bhagavan. So the Bhagavatam kicks out all these cheating and says that the highest goal is Krishna Prema. That's why other religions are cheating. Only Bhagavatam teaches the philosophy that don't desire anything but Prem Seva. What do we want? Do we want to attain Krishna? Because worshippers of Lord Narayan or Vishnu, they want to attain Narayan. They want moksha. Vaikuntha Mukti. Oh, I want Mukti. I want to go to Vaikuntha. I want to have Srupya. Srupya Mukti. I want to have a form like Narayan. So that means you want. That means you want. That's cheating. But devotees, Krishna Bhaktas, they don't want Krishna. We're not trying to attain Krishna. And we're not trying to attain Krishna Loka. All we want is Seva. Janmani, 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 Bhavatat, Bhakti, Hoitaki, Toyi. Janmani, Janmani, birth after birth, all you want is Bhagavat Bhakti, service to the Lord. So therefore there's no cheating. That means pleasing the Lord. So the devotees, they don't desire anything but prem seva, the loving service of Radha and Krishna. But there's something called sakama. And Bhagavad Gita talks about sakama karma yoga. So karma yogis with sakama means they do activities, they do religious duties to attain something else. Also, the Srimad Bhagavatam kicks out the desire for liberation, gyan marg. Anishkam yoga is also rejected in Srimad Bhagavatam. Nishkam yogi, he has no material desire, yet he has a spiritual desire for liberation. But in Shuddha Bhakti Yoga, or Shuddha Bhakti Yogi, pure devotee is only pure devotion, or Shuddha Bhakti Yoga, is the only thing taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches this: become a pure devotee of the Lord, kick out all other separate individual or selfish desires. Even going to Vaikuntha is a selfish desire, because I want to go to Vaikuntha. Well, why? Well, I want to live in a nice place. I heard about it. It sounds great. Eternal life, this, that. Form like Krishna, form like Vishnu. No, I just want to serve. We want to make Krishna happy. This is bhakti, pure devotion, Shuddha bhakti. These other forms of attainment, there's some contamination there. Even going to Vaikuntha, there's some contamination. Although you have to be in prema to go there, but the prema is not kevala. It's not the purest, highest form of prema. There's some selfish mixture there. Even though you have to be perfect, and Vaidhi sadhana and bhava bhakti and prema, you have to come to prema to go to Vaikuntha. But you want something. So the Bhagavatam kicks even that out. The Bhagavatam presents Braja prema, the gopi's prema, gopika prema, which is nirmal. Yashoda's prema is nirmal. Nirmal Vishuddha prema. Nirmal Vishuddha prema of Yashoda and Nanda Baba and Sridham and Subal and Balaram and Krishna and Radharani and gopis. It's nirmal Vishuddha prema. Totally pure. And this gives the greatest happiness. Anandam buddhivardhanam. Pratipadam purnamritaswaranam. Step after step, one attains the greatest happiness by absorbing himself in the prema seva of Radha and Krishna, Lord Gauranga and Sri Guru. Hare Krishna.